Jerry, your training of me about how to interact with blind people, with you, began decades ago when I walked you smack dab into a newspaper rack at a Shoney's restaurant in Lexington, Kentucky, as we were going into a Toastmasters meeting. And I think maybe a switch flipped in your mind and mine right then, letting us know that I maybe needed some instruction from you. And it's been my honor to have had you teach me a number of things over these many years. We met in 1979 about the best way to interact with a blind person, specifically with you. And I'm aware that some of what we talk about today might only apply to you. It might not necessarily be that everyone agrees with all of these points, but there's value in knowing how you want to be interacted with, and people can extrapolate from there. Let's start out, and remind me what the Jordan method is.
Well, the Jordan method leads the blind, as I've been told and instructed, was to let the blind person hold your elbow, whichever elbow they choose. And by doing that, you telegraph to the blind person what you're doing. For example, if you're walking straight, I'm one step behind you, and therefore I'm walking along. If you step up, your elbow goes up, which alerts me that the next step I take will be up. Or if you go through a narrow spot that you have to turn sideways to get through, when you turn sideways, that instructs me to get behind you to go through a narrow spot. If you walk past something that there's only room enough for you to get through, you swing your arm around behind you, which tells me to get behind you. So whatever you're doing is telegraphed to me through your elbow by the way it moves.
Great. And I think you and I have gotten really pretty efficient at that, at those moves. I know that when you and I are going to navigate our way through a building, I'll walk up to your left side. You hold your cane in your right hand, and I'll just gently brush against you and put my elbow out. I sort of hold my arm at a 90-degree angle, and then you very gently hold on to my arm. I don't hold on to yours. And I feel like we do a really good job with what you just said, where I'll turn a little bit to navigate us through a tight spot, which often is between chairs in a conference room or something of that nature. And it works very well. Do you have any advice about how I can do it differently or better?
No, you do an excellent job. You're very conscious about what's going on with you when I'm with you and what happens. So you're very conscious about that. So you do an outstanding job. I don't have any additional things to add to it.
Okay, well, you've taught me well. You've also taught me that you like, for me and for anyone, in fact, to introduce ourselves to you when we come up to you and you're in a group, because you can't see that someone else is, you know, added the little circle of people that might be standing at a conference or in a restaurant. So we're to come up and actually tell you that we're there and tell you what our name is. And also, I've heard you say, don't play guess my name. Could you speak to that just a little bit?
Yeah, that's so childish of people. I don't know what they think they're doing or why they think they have to do that. But a lot of people's voice I do recognize, some I don't. And if you're sure, like you are, that I'd recognize your voice, you don't need to identify yourself necessarily. But if there's any question at all about it, then you need to tell me, I'm Tom. You can put your hand on my forearm to alert me to where you are. That's kind of eye contact with me. Whereas with you, with a sighted person, you stand there looking at each other. But if you touch my arm And so in some cases, you can leave your hand there because that lets me know you're still there. I've had people walk away while I've been talking with them, and I'm still talking, and they're gone. So I need that contact, physical contact, which is equal to eye contact for sighted people. But that's the best thing to do, especially if you're sure the person doesn't really know who you are.
So you're saying to walk up and not just stand there and start to talk, but actually place our hand on your arm or on your shoulder, that's okay, that's not too intrusive.
No, not for me. It is for some people, and you really need to ask the person. If you're not sure whether it's intrusive or not, don't touch them. Just tell them your name and start talking with them. But if you think it's okay, it's really a good thing to do, to let the person know. And as far as I guess my name, guess who this is, the games you mentioned earlier, my immediate response in many cases is, I don't know who you are and I don't give a damn. If you're going to play those childish games, then I don't have any time for it.
Right. I understand. I still continue to say my name when I come up to you. I know that you know my voice, but I never assume that you can hear me well, because a lot of times we're in noisy environments and things like that. A lot of conversation going on too. So along the lines of how to get your attention, one thing that I know you don't like is for someone to grab your hand to shake it, that you prefer for people meeting you to wait for you to extend yours first. Do I understand that right?
Yes, that's correct. Because more so for other people than for myself, to grab their hand or their arm or something startles them. And if it's, especially if it's a female, it may even frighten her seriously. So, but I'm not frightened by it. You grab my hand, well, there you are. But with some people, so I would not recommend you do that. I'd recommend you wait for the person to extend their hand, then you can take their hand and shake it. And I usually will when I'm meeting somebody for the first time. I'll hold my hand out, and most of the time somebody will shake it. If they don't, that's okay. That's fine with me if they don't want to shake hands. But don't grab anybody.
Okay. You also have made it clear that people should not feel ill at ease around you, that you know you're blind and it's not contagious. Have you had people that seemed like they were ill at ease?
Oh, quite often. Yeah, people who know me and been around me a lot don't, but often when I meet a new person, they are reluctant to say certain words, reluctant to do certain things, and that's understandable. You know the old expression there, but for the grace of God goes I. Well, you know that, and people thinking, well, you know, I could be that way, and they're reluctant. They don't know what to do. So since I have been sighted and I understand the sighted world, in order for a sighted person and myself have a meaningful relationship, it's up to me to set the stage to educate the person and let them know where the boundaries are, and right in the beginning, and then it makes life easy for them. A lot easier for them because they're not so reluctant, they're not so afraid of saying, did you see, or some of those kinds of things. Do you like that color, some of that? I've had people do that and slap their hand over their mouth and say, oh, I'm sorry. It's not necessary. It's not necessary for me. It may be for some people, but not for me.
So it's perfectly fine to say, think, to use words, see, sight, watch, and the word blind itself. That's, none of those are offensive. Is that right?
No, not at all. It's not offensive at all to me. You know, I like to think I'm normal too, so you can say all those words. And if you are reluctant about it or you feel like you can't do it, then you're ill at ease in any relationship or encounter that we have. And I certainly don't want that to be the case. I want you to be as comfortable as possible. So talk normal. Just talk just like you would to anybody.
Thank you. Okay. I know you also like people to speak directly to you, not to whoever is with you. And I know you've had some interesting experience along those lines. And along with that, you want people to speak in a normal tone of voice, normal volume, and not to shout if they are, in fact, speaking directly to you. Could you speak a little bit about that?
People who don't know anybody who's blind or have never interacted with anybody who's blind have some real strange ideas about it. And first of all, they think since you can't see, you can't hear either. And since you can't see, you don't know anything about what you want or know about things. For example, one time a very good friend and I were going to Florida, and we were on Highway 59 heading for Birmingham. And it was about 4 o'clock in the morning. We stopped to have breakfast and sat down at the table. Well, the waitress obviously noticed that I was blind when I came in because of my cane. She took my friend's order, and then she said, "Does he want anything?" My friend said, "Well, I don't know. You have to ask him." So she turned around to me and raised her voice several levels and said, "Sir, would you like to have some breakfast?" I cupped my ear in my hand like I was hard of hearing and said, "Yes, I'll take some breakfast." And I just told her, "You don't have to yell at me. I can't see, but I can hear just fine." And she took my order, and everything was okay after that. But that gives you an example of how uneducated the public is about dealing with folks.
Well, we're changing that with this recording, so that's good. Also, you have made it clear that you don't want anyone to move or, and for that matter, even touch your cane, that when you set your cane down, you need to know in an instant where it is, especially if you have to move quickly. Speak a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, one thing, kids are bad about wanting to play with it. And I understand that, and I don't get unhappy about that because kids don't know and don't understand. But adults should know that not to grab my cane. I've had adults come up and grab my cane while I have it in my hand trying to find my way around. That's something that should not ever happen because that's my contact with the world and what's around me. And if you grab my cane, it's like putting your hands over your eyes. So I can't tell what's going on, so don't do that. And by the same token, to answer the other part of your question, if I am at your house or at the table or somewhere like that, and I put my cane down, I have a fold-up cane, if I hold it up and lay it down, and you need it moved, ask me to move it. Because when I move it, I know where it is. When I have to have it, I know where to get it. A sighted person may pick the cane up from the side of my plate and lay it across the top of my plate. And that's perfectly legitimate for them because they can see what they did and see where it is. But I don't have any way of knowing what they did with it. So when it comes time and I need it, I'm reaching around, hunting around for it because I don't know where it is. So it's always best to ask the blind person to handle their cane, move it, and do what they need to do with it rather than you doing that. Just remember, they have to know where it is at all times.
So where do you place your cane when you're seated at a table at a meeting or when you're seated at a restaurant?
That all depends on the situation. Sometimes I will put it under my, put it on a chair and sit on it, but long ways. Sometimes I lay it on the table beside my plate. Sometimes if I'm in a booth, I'll just lay it in the back of the booth. So it just depends on the situation, what it is. Now, if I'm at a round table with four people at the table we're eating, I will not put it on the table. It gets in the way. Mm-hmm. Often those tables are not large enough for what they try to put on them in the first place. So in order to have your cane there, you're taking up space that's needed for other things. So in that case, I'll sit on it. Or if that's not comfortable, I'll just put it on the floor under my chair, fold it up, lay it on the floor under my chair. And sometimes I'll do that with my hat. I have a winter type, rain type hat that's sort of semi-plastic, and I will lay that on the floor and lay my cane beside it under the chair. It's out of everybody's way, and it's easily accessible to me if I need it. So it varies with the situation.
I know that you also don't want people to move anything. I've learned that when I'm at your home, that, I mean, that means don't move anything because you're not going to be able to find it without some trouble later. Have you had people rearrange your home?
And... Yes, I laugh because my home's like an early junk store. Stuff everywhere. But I know where it is, and I know where to go get it if I need it. But if you move it, I don't know where you put it. My niece came up this past summer and spent a week at my house, and in my living room, she decided stuff wasn't where it needed to be, and she moved stuff, moved most everything around. I'm still trying to find stuff because she moved it, and I can't specifically state at the time what I'm looking for, but when it comes time to, and I want it, then I know what I'm looking for, and I have time, have a time trying to find it. So the best thing, if you have to move something, sometimes you'll have to move a chair. Sometimes you may have to move something on the table. Tell me about it. Say, I've got to move this book here out of the way for right now. We need space, and then tell me about that. But don't just come in and assume. There again, we're back to this assuming that you know what the person needs or wants. Never assume that. Always ask.
Good. Okay. I know today you don't have a guide dog, but you have had them in the past, and you taught me not to distract or pet or feed a guide dog, that the guide dog is working. I could speak to that.
Yes. There's a lot of people who don't understand that a guide dog in harness is a working dog, and it's not a toy, it's not a plaything. When it's out of harness, it's a dog. You can play with it and throw sticks and chase it and throw balls and do all that stuff, but when a guide dog is in harness, it's a working dog, and that dog has control of your life to a certain extent. So you shouldn't touch the dog. You should not pet the dog, you should not touch the dog, just act like it's not there. Act like somebody had a stick in their hand or something. You wouldn't go and pet somebody's stick, so don't pet their dog, because they're a working dog. And dogs are dogs. They do funny things. And the reason I don't have a dog now is dogs are trained to look after the person that they're working for and try to take care of them and get them out of a situation. If a dog thinks you're lost, it will try to take you someplace, like to a store, to a door, or someplace where somebody is where you can get help and get directions. And personally, I don't care for that. I don't want a dog trying to make my decision for me. I've rarely been lost. I've rarely had a problem, so I don't need the dog to make decisions for me. And a funny story I have to tell at this time. When I went and got my first dog, they told me, said, now your dog is trained. It knows what to do, knows how to do it. You give it the instructions and it'll do it. So just whatever your dog does, follow it, because it knows. I was downtown Louisville one time on 7th Street, and my dog was walking along, and it turned, walked up one step, walked inside of an enclosure, and stopped. Well, now I'm thinking, what am I in? And the first thing I thought about is this one of those plywood tunnels they put around buildings to keep bricks and other debris from falling on pedestrian traffic? If it is, then I'm doing right. But I waited. Dog just stood there for quite some time. Finally, I decided to reach around to see what was there. And so I reached around. There were shelves and little cubby holes and stuff all along both walls. I realized then that I was by the post office. This was a mail truck that was parked at the curb. Well, can you imagine me coming out of that, nonchalantly wandering out of the back of that mail truck with my guide dog whistling like that's what I'm supposed to do, like it's an everyday thing? It was really funny at the time. Fortunately, there wasn't anybody around, so I didn't have to be embarrassed, but there was an occasion where a guide dog showed its dog self, so to speak, and one of the dogs I had loved to ride. It was always trying to get in somebody's car. It loved to ride, and so a couple of times when a car pulled over to the curb to make a turn, dog would run up and put his nose up to the door handle to get in the car, and that often frightened the occupants of the car. So dogs have their problems too, but by and far, for the person who need and are familiar with and can use them, they're just a godsend. They're just wonderful, but they just don't happen to work well for me.
So your dog took you into the plywood tunnel, I think I've heard you call it, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. You've also made it clear that people should say goodbye to you when they're leaving the room. Don't just disappear.
Yeah, that brings up a couple of different points. First of all, I'll add this in there. You haven't asked about it, but you probably will, but I'll add this in here. When you take a blind person into a room they've not been in before or they're not familiar with, indicate where everything is. Like if it's your living room, say right over there's a TV and point at it. Don't just say over there. Either take the person to it or point at it and locate stuff relative to other stuff so the person can get a picture of the room and where things are. And when you have a person sit down, the best thing to do is if you're taking a person to a chair at a table, take them to the back of the chair and say, here's your chair. Table's right in front of you. You can move to the left or right. Let them know which is the best way to move to get into the chair. If it happens to be in a living room chair, I'd like for you to take me up and let my shins touch the front of the chair. Then I can check out the arms of the chair and sit down in the chair. I have, when I first lost the sight and I was learning how to do this stuff myself, I had someone do that, walk me up and put my shins against the front of the chair. I reached down and felt the arm of the chair. Did not check to see which arm it was and turned around promptly, sat on the floor.
Mm.
So, but what I do is I check the chair and find out where the seat is and I'll turn around and sit down in the chair. That's the proper way to do that. And if we're talking and you have to leave the room, just say, excuse me, I have to go to the kitchen, or excuse me, I'm gonna go out of the room for a few minutes, I'll be right back. Something along those lines. Just let me know that you're gone. Never leave a blind person in an unfamiliar place without letting them know that you're gone, because it's disconcerting, and to a lot of people it may cause panic attacks to find out that there's nobody around and they're in a room, they don't know what's in there. So it's always a great idea to say, I'm leaving the room, I'll be back in a minute.
Good, okay. You've also talked about that how you want to decide how and when you want to be helped to move around, that you don't want other people to make, we've used the word assumption, to assume what you need, that you want to be in charge of that, of course, and that you don't want people, as we've talked about, to grab your arm, you want to take theirs, and you don't want people to push you in a direction, you want people to lead you. And I think I've actually seen that, not with you, but I've seen people sort of, because I was doing some work for the blind in Kentucky at an association once, and as a speaker, and I saw some people that I don't think knew exactly what they were doing. They seemed like they were sort of shoving people. Could you talk a little bit about that? About it being your decision.
Do what?
About the need for how you want to be interacted with.
Well, it goes back to what I said in the beginning. Never assume that you know what the person needs or how to do it. Ask the person, do you need some help or may I help you? The person said yes, then ask them, how would you like me to help you or what can I do? I've had people come up to me on the streets in Louisville years ago when I lived there. I'm going across the street, I'm waiting for the traffic to change. Somebody come up and say, you need some help? I said, yes, please. They'd get my left arm in a death grip, push me out in front of them at arm's length and march me across the street in front of them. Tell me to begin in the middle of the street. We're approaching the curb, and I'd be high-stepping from there onto the curb, trying to step up on the curb. It's really disconcerting. It's really very confusing for the blind person. So you never do that. I learned something about that when a person grabs you by the elbow. I always take my arm up over, make a circle toward the back, and come up behind their arm and get them by the elbow. And say, this is a much more comfortable way and a much better way to do it. May I do it this way? And they say yes, and then it works okay. But think about any of these situations, put yourself in, think about how you would feel if somebody grabbed you. You had to close your eyes, somebody grabbed you and tried to push you through an unfamiliar space. You're constantly worried about falling into something, or over something, or bumping into something, all that stuff, and so. So it's just not the way to do it. And I tell people this. When you lead a horse, you don't get it by the tail. So if you're going to lead me, don't get behind me and get me and push me in front of you. That's not the way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I am following you.
Good. Okay. Talk a little more about how to help go up and down a curb. I know those can be treacherous.
Well, people use language that's it's just funny the way people talk. For example, they say, the curb's coming up. Well, it may be a down curb, but you say it's coming up, so a blind person taking you literally, they're ready to step up, and they get to the curb and say, well, at the curb, they step up, and then it's a very jolting experience to try to step up, only to find that you're stepping down, maybe even cause the person to fall. So be specific when you tell a person, we're approaching a curb that you need to step down, or we're approaching a down curb or an up curb. And when I'm by myself, when I approach a curb and hit it with my cane, before I ever step up on the curb, I'll take my cane and run it back and forth along the curb about 2 feet on either side of me to make sure I'm not stepping up into a light pole or a trash can or something along those lines. And when you're helping a person cross the street and they're following you, always remember, if you're stepping up close to an object such as that, allow the blind person enough room to step up, but be very specific whether they'll be going up or down. It's I almost fell down some steps one time because the person said, the steps are coming up, so I was expecting to go up steps, and they're only down, and I stumbled down the first couple of steps, but fortunately for me, I was holding on to their arm, and they were able to keep me from falling. But had that person decided to let go or move away from me at that time, I would have fallen down the steps because the person said the steps are coming up when in fact they were going down.
So when you and I are approaching, let's take each of those. We're approaching a staircase that goes down. Now, I'm always on your left so that you can hold the rail with your right hand. Is that the way to do it?
That's way for me, yes.
Okay. Because what do you do with your cane? You know, I've really not noticed. What do you do with your...
Well, I put my cane in my left hand. The reason for that is I have a better sense of where I am when I'm holding the handrail. And also, if I stumble and fall, I won't drag you down with me.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times when I'm, especially if I have a lady helping me, they're generally smaller than I am. And if I fall, I don't want to cause her to fall also, or anybody. So the best thing to do is show me or tell me you're right there at the handrail. I put my cane in my left hand, go down the steps when I get to the bottom, and switch it back to my right and take your elbow and continue as we were before we went down the steps. Going up's the same way.
And when we come to the staircase, going up or down, I always pause just for a second and make sure that you've got the handrail and that you know the next step is onto a step.
Yes, that's exactly the way you should do it.
And then when we reach the end of the staircase, again, up or down, I'll let you know we're approaching the last step.
Yeah.
Okay. What about revolving doors?
Oh, there's some funny stories about that. Revolving doors are an entity in and of themselves. For example, you determine when you look at the revolving door if the compartment is big enough for both of us. If it is, then we both can get in the revolving door and go around. If it's not, you get in first and tell me that the next opening is for me, and I can feel the door go by, and I'll step in the next opening and follow around. When you get around the door, you step out. When I get around, I'll come right out behind you and get your elbow. And that's the way to do it. And so I said some funny stories back when I first lost my sight. I was going to fly to California to get my first guide dog, and my wife took me downtown Louisville to the airline's office to get my ticket. And we were going out a revolving door. She said, now, I'll get in the door and go out, and when I get around, I'll step out onto the sidewalk, and you get in and come around, and I'll call your name, and you'll know where to get out. Like I couldn't tell there was an opening there, but she said, you'll know where to get out. So I got in the door and started going round and around. I was just going round and around, and she was out there, Jerry, Jerry, Jerry. Oh, she was so mad at me when I came out of there. But revolving doors are not difficult. People make them difficult, but they really aren't.
Okay, good. What about cars getting in and out of automobiles, which we do a lot? Do you have any advice for people about how to best help with that?
Well, the best thing to do is, first of all, tell me whether it's a back or front seat, and then put my hand on the door handle and let me open the door and get in. Now, a lot of people will go around, and it's a natural act of courtesy that people do. They'll go around and they'll open the door, and that's okay. But in that case, you have to let me put my hand on the top or the edge of the door away from the hinges. And I put my other hand on the roof of the car so I'll know where things are. And then I can just get in, sit down, and pull the door shut. That's the best way to do that. And a lot of people won't do that. They'll open the door and say, "All right, get in." Well, I don't know where I am relative to the opening. And so it's difficult. Me and I fumbled around trying to get in, but all I have to do is either put my hand on top of the door or on top of the car. Mm-hmm. And I know where things are, and I know enough about cars to know how to get in and out of them. But I just need to be oriented as to where the door is and where the seat is. That's the best way to do that.
Well, I might need to be straightened out a little bit then, because I have gotten into the habit for a long time now that you and I will approach the car. We're usually approaching it from the front when I'm picking you up at your home. And I'll tell you that the car is 3 or 4 feet in front of you, and you'll touch the front of the car with your cane. And then I go on to my door, and you work your way around the car to the passenger door, and then you find the handle and open it and get in. I've been making that assumption that you like that.
That's fine with me. What I told you about the door and to put my hand on the door on the top is for other folks, for a lot of other folks. But as far as I'm concerned, you're doing it exactly right. I'm proficient enough to know when I get to the front of the car to go around, open the door, and get in to the front or the back. Because, see, I just don't think it's necessary for whoever I'm with to walk around to my side of the car. They can go to theirs, and I'll go to mine. And all you need to do is tell me whether it's the front or the back of the car, and I know how to get to the car and get in. And by the same token, when we're in a car and you pull into a parking place or you pull into some place, there again, I don't see any sense in you walking all the way around to my door while I stand there and wait. Tell me to meet me at the front or the back of the car, and I'll go there and meet you there.
Okay.
So you do it fine. You're not a problem the way you do it, but much of what I'm telling you about it is for the benefit of other folks who are not quite so proficient.
Sure. Okay. Good. This just now occurred to me, and I guess it makes some sense to ask about this. That has to do with pacing when walking. I'm not a real fast walker, so I don't believe I ever walk too fast when we're together. But do you ever run into a problem with that someone is walking faster than you want to go?
Yes, faster or slower.
Okay.
But here again, it's up to the individual blind person to not be bashful about it. Tell them, slow down, you're walking too fast. You know, I don't like to grip your elbow until your hand gets numb, so I just lightly hold on to your elbow. If you walk real fast, a lot of times you'll walk away from me.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're walking too fast, I'll just tell you, slow down a little bit. So, yeah, you can walk, and you can walk too slow, because remember this. You probably never thought about this, but there's a certain balance in walking, and there's a certain speed that you walk that is conducive to you maintaining good balance. So if you're walking too slow, that for me at least, if you walk too slow, then that messes up the balance. I have trouble walking. And by the same token, if you walk too fast, that messes up the balance. But it's an individual thing what you need to do. So it's like you had your grandmother. If your grandmother's 85 or 90 years old and you were helping her, you wouldn't be walking real fast. You'd walk according to her pace. And you do the same thing with a blind person. If you have to, ask them whether they like to walk fast or not. But if not, you can start out and notice and adjust your speed according to what's suitable for them.
Okay, thank you. All right. And then once you have entered a room with somebody, what type of orientation do you like to have to where you are?
Well, just tell me, like, if you go into an office, you tell me your desk is right in front of you there, 4 feet, and off to the right is this, and off to the left is that, and you can do that. And here's your chair right in front of the desk. You walk up and put my hand on the back of the chair. Most office chairs that you sit in are a straight back chair, and they don't have handles, so, or arms on them, so you just hold on to the back of the chair and sit down. If I'm at your home and I've not been there before or very often, then you need to orient me about where things are in your home, because we certainly don't want to be knocking over your prized valuable vase and breaking it or some of that stuff, and we don't want to fall over your coffee table either. So you can just tell us where things are, where they're located, and you may have to tell us twice, because if it's a new place, trying to categorize, absorb, and locate all that stuff, it may not take real exactly the first time, so you may have to tell us twice. But that's the best thing to do, is just point out where things are and the doors. Point out where the doors out of the room happens to be and where the restroom is in whatever situation you're in. Now, unless it's, if you're in a public place like a restaurant or something, I'll always need assistance to the restroom, because often it's very difficult to get to with tables and booths and other people and all that. So it's not necessary. But if I go to your house and you set me on the couch in the living room, you may say to me, well, if you need to go to the restroom, just go down to the left end of the couch and turn. And you go right in the hall, it's the first door on the left or something. You can do that to let me know where it is. And remember this, when you're facing me, left and right's backwards.
Okay, right. Correct. I better not say right. Correct. I know it's also important to help you know where hazards are. You know, like in someone's home, it could be a toy on the floor or an open cabinet door or even a dog or a cat that's in the room that might be freaked out by being touched by a cane or something like that. Have you had some situations where you were not alerted about hazards and had a bad outcome, or has that not been an issue?
No, that really hasn't been an issue, because when I go into people's house, I move slowly just for that very reason, because there might be, and I kind of slide my feet, so I don't have to worry about picking them up, stepping on a ball or something. I just bump it out of the way. And if it happened to be animals, dogs are generally want to come up and be petted and all that, and I like dogs and cats, and they're fine, so they don't scare me. And if a dog comes up to me, I've not ever had one bark or get angry, and cats want to play with your cane. If you touch your cane with a cat, it won't start playing with it. And so I don't have to worry about that. And those can kind of have cabinet doors open. I've had problems in my own home with that. So when I married Sylvia, I had to train her, because she was bad about leaving cabinet doors open, and pretty quickly she got used to it and closed them. And so, but generally people close their cabinet doors and stuff like that. And sometimes, now here's the other part of that, is sometimes if I'm in the kitchen with somebody and they're talking with them while they're doing it, they may have the dishwasher open or the oven door open, putting something in or taking something out of either one of them, and they'll open them, won't think anything about it, leave it open. And I have run into those doors bump my shin, but once again, I don't move quickly, so I don't have to worry about falling over any of that kind of stuff and hurting anything. But it's always a good idea to remember, if you have a blind person in your home that's not familiar with your place, to close those doors and see that those things are not in the way, because everybody doesn't walk like I do. They don't slide their feet. They'll pick their feet up and maybe step on a ball or something.
Jerry, after we finish this recording session, we're going to be going out to lunch, and we have had many meals together over the years, and you have taught me, I don't even think about it much anymore, about how you want to be interacted with in a restaurant. So I don't want to assume that I remember the finer points of what you taught me. So talk a little bit about the help that you maybe need or don't need when you're ordering, getting, or managing your food, and whether that's at a restaurant where you order off of a menu or like the one we're going to go to in a little while, which is a buffet. What's the best way to work with you on that?
Well, let's start with the menu, or ordering from the menu. Now, some places have a small menu, some places have several pages in the menu. I generally know what category of food I want. For example, if I want a sandwich, I'll just ask you to read the sandwich menu. Or if I want a soup and a salad, I'll just ask you to read that menu. Or if it's dinner and it's entrees, I'll ask you to read that menu, and then I'll decide from that. Now, often I'll ask you the prices of what we're getting, so I know, because we have a limited income, therefore we have to be conscious of that. But that's the way to do it. Ask the person what category, what kind of things do you want? Do you just want a salad, or you want a sandwich, or what? Then that can reduce the amount of reading a person has to do, or how much looking you have to do to get to the right menu. And so generally, I can say I know what I want, and then if they bring the food to the table, a lot of people feel that they need to do that, because, and they do with many people, but I don't particularly need you to tell me what's on my plate in the order, like at 12 o'clock is bread and at 3 o'clock is potatoes. And so I don't need you to do that, because eating is kind of a fun time for me, because it's a surprise. Generally, every bite I take is a surprise. I don't know what I'm getting necessarily. So it's kind of a surprise. I don't need that, but some people do. Some people want you to describe the plate and tell them where everything is. And remember this, where you're standing determines where the stuff is on the plate. I've had people stand across from me, look at my plate, and tell me that the bread's at 12 o'clock. Well, actually, it was at 6 o'clock, because from their perspective, it was 12 o'clock, but from mine, it was 6. So the person has to be conscious of that, getting the stuff right. But, and you need to tell me where my drink is, but let me situate that so I'll know where it is, so I won't knock it over. I have on occasions, rare occasion, but once in a while I have knocked a glass of water over because I didn't know where it was sitting. Of course, you don't need to be aware of this, but the waitress should be aware of this. If you come to a table serving a drink to a blind person, set the glass back right where you got it. Pay attention. Put it back where you got it. I'll have people come to me and refill my drink and pick it up on the right-hand side of my plate at 1 o'clock, and they'll set it down over to the left at the edge of the table. They're just not paying any attention, not thinking, so you need to put the glass back where you got it from, or the cup. And generally, I know where the other stuff is. Now, sometimes you'll get a small dessert, like cheesecake or piece of cake, on a plate up at the top of your plate in some places when they serve. So when you do that, you need to tell the person that at the head of your plate is your dessert on a small plate. You need to let us know about that. And as far as buffets are concerned, what I like to do with a buffet is have the person I'm with, let me carry my own plate. They carry their plate. There's no sense in going through the line for me, and then they have to go back and go the second time. We can do it all at the same time. And they'll tell me what's on the buffet, and I'll choose what I want. And if I say medium servings, and it's like one spoonful, or usually spoons are a little larger, so one spoonful. But I'll just go down through the line and have you tell me what I would prefer. Is if you look at the line first and tell me the order of the food, because sometimes I don't understand how they order the food. They put the salad first, and then you don't have room for other stuff, or they put the salad last and you don't have room for the salad. So I need to kind of know what the order is so I can know how to order stuff situated on my plate. But I'll carry my plate. You just tell me what it is, and I'll tell you what I want. You put it on my plate, and then we can go sit down.
What about cutting meat?
That's interesting. I always asked the waitress, waiter, or the server, whatever you want to call them, I always ask that person to have someone cut my steak, if I have a steak or whatever meat I have, because I don't want them to bring it to the table and the person I'm having dinner with to let their food get cold while they're trying to cut mine up when they can cut it up in the kitchen and bring it all hot at the same time. And I had a very alert maitre d' in a restaurant in Louisville one time many years ago when I ordered, asked me, would you like to have your steak cut? And I said, yes, please, thank you. And from that time to this, I always ask, and people are very good about it. They notice I can't see, and so I've never had anybody say, well, why don't you cut your own? They just say, okay, yes, sure. And I give them a little extra tip for doing it, but it's not a problem. I always like to have it, somebody cut it up. Now, the other stuff, generally, the other stuff is cut. Sometimes you get asparagus or broccoli or something like that needs to be cut. In that case, I'll ask them to cut that as well. But yes, I much prefer to have my food cut for me before it comes to the table. I've tried to cut stuff up myself, wound up with it on the floor and in my lap and everywhere.
But if you're not able to get it cut by staff, I take it it's okay for the person who is with you to ask you if you would like to have some assistance with that. That's
well, sure, yeah. But they generally don't have to because I ask them. Like I said, I'm not bashful. I'll ask or tell you what I need, and if they don't cut it, then I'll say, would you please cut this? And people always do. They never had any problem with it.
Okay, thank you. Now, this is not talking specifically about what you maybe like or don't like in the way people interact, but in general, if a person, a sighted person, sees a blind person standing by themselves in a building or out on a street corner, and they appear as if they might need some assistance, how should the sighted person approach them? Should they approach them to begin with? And if they do, what should they say or do? Now, so this would be coming up to a stranger.
Well, that's an individual thing that for the person offering the help, whether they want to ask or not. But I would recommend that if you see a person in that situation, whether they appear to be lost or needy or not, if they're just standing alone, you have no idea why. So you could just walk up and say, hello, may I help you? And then the person will say yes or no. And they say, no, I'm waiting on a friend that'll be here in a few minutes, thank you. Or the person will say, yes, I need some help. And if you say, may I help you? And the person says, yes, I appreciate some help. Then you say, how may I help you? What do you need? What do you want me to do? And in that case, the person being helped, the blind person being helped, should say what they need. I'd like to take your elbow and have you show me where something is, or I'd like to, whatever they need. The blind person bears a lot of responsibility in this as well, because if I'm a blind person, I don't tell you what I need, you don't have any way of knowing it, and I can't get angry with you if you do it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I have to tell you.
What about when the stranger walks up to you? Should they touch your arm or elbow? Now, again, this is a stranger and you're not expecting anybody.
No.
That's what I would think, yeah.
No, it would be all right, generally speaking, no, don't touch the person. Walk up to them, stand a couple of feet away, and say, hello, I'm Tom, may I help you? Or you don't have to give them your name, but it would be a good idea, in my opinion. But you say, I notice you're standing here, may I help you?
Good, okay.
And the person could say yes or no, and then you proceed from there.
And then my final point here that I recall you having taught me is that it is okay to laugh with you at jokes about blindness. And I know that you have one that you like to tell about your experience with a guide dog when you were parachuting.
Well, what was the question again now?
Is it in fact okay? Well, I know that it is. Is it okay to laugh at jokes that you tell?
Of course. You think just because we lost our sight, we lost our humor as well?
Not at
all. Let me tell you something. I play tricks on folks all the time, and they play them. People who know me well play them right back on me. For example, my cousin was over at my house one time. We were eating, and he fixed me a piece of toast with peanut butter on it. And he laid it down on the table. I reached over, put my hand on it, put my finger in the peanut butter, and I told him, I said, don't do that. Put it over here. And so, and he laid it somewhere in this, and what I did was reached up, put my hand on a table beside my plate, went around the plate looking for it. Well, he laid it right there on the edge of the table where I put my hand, so I put my hand in it the second time. So we got a big laugh out of that, and I laughed about that, and other things I laughed about. There's, and jokes, I tell jokes on a lot of times. The one thing you're talking about my guide dog is I do public speaking, and sometimes in my public speaking about my life and the way I've done things, what I've done, it gets pretty serious, pretty intense. And so at one point, two-thirds, three-quarters way through the speech, I'll start talking about sports and the sports and the things I get involved in. And I did learn to water ski 7 years after I lost my sight. That's a true story.
Hmm.
And I tell about that. And then I tell them, I say, yeah, and I used to skydive, but I had to quit. And I paused for 5 or 10 seconds, let them think about it. I said, yeah, I was scared the hell out of my guide dog. And everybody breaks up. That breaks the tension. And from then on, it's easy. It's easy. But the thing is, you can tell jokes. I laugh at all kinds of jokes. I laugh at jokes on blind people. I laugh at jokes on me. And so, and I've learned not to be real serious about this stuff. Somebody said, they'll say, back to the word, use the right word, and say, did you see something? Then they'll smack their hand and say, well, I'm sorry. I said, no, hell, I didn't see it. It was too dark that day. I couldn't tell. Or they say, did you read something? I say, no, this recycled paper is so bad that the print and the paper are the same color and it's hard to make it out. So I didn't read that. But the thing is, it goes back to one basic idea that I have. I have been sighted. I was sighted for 25 years. I know what it's like being sighted. I know what the sighted world is like. You've never been blind. You don't know what it's like being blind. So unless I'm open and honest with you about my condition and just what we've been talking about, we can never have any kind of meaningful relationship. So it's up to me to set the stage and set the pace and let you know what's okay and what's not okay. And a lot of things that you may think are not okay are fine. So it's up to me, though, to set the stage and make our relationship comfortable.
Well, Jerry, as we close, is there anything else that you can think of, any points that you would like people to know about how to interact with a blind person or how to interact specifically with you, if it maybe doesn't apply to everybody? Is there anything that we've missed here?
Well, the only thing that comes to mind is like your clothing matching. I try to keep my clothes pretty simple, so no matter what combination I put on, it will match. It won't be like a clown suit. But everybody doesn't do that, and there are ways to mark your clothes, and a lot of people do. But still, you'll get things on wrong that you don't expect, or two different colored socks or something like that. If you notice a blind person with that, tell them privately. Tell them after the function's over. I one time went down to one of my Toastmasters meeting wearing a sport jacket and a tie and dressed up and wearing canvas boat shoes because I put the wrong pair of shoes on and didn't realize until I got to the meeting. I felt a little uncomfortable about it, but as the meeting went on, I realized nobody in the room noticed it, so it was okay. But if you notice something like that, just tell a person quietly after the meeting, so you can say, you got the wrong shoes on, I think, or your socks don't match or something like that. You don't make a big issue of it because it's embarrassing enough to some people having sitting there thinking that I've been through the whole meeting looking like this and they're embarrassed about it. So that's what I would say. Just do things quietly and don't make any more issues of anything than you have to.
What if, I see that you have some food on your tie or on your shirt, something like that, a stain. It's the same thing, right? Mention that, but don't mention it at a time where it might cause you to be really distracted or embarrassed, but just let you know eventually that...
Yeah.
Or if it could be dealt with immediately, then...
Well, I've had breadcrumbs on my coat before at a meeting, and somebody in a meeting will come over and brush them off, and that's okay because nobody thinks anything. They'll brush them off. So you got a few crumbs on your coat here. Let me brush them off, and that's okay to do that.
Okay, good. Well, Jerry, this has been very interesting, and it will be very helpful to everyone who listens to it. And you and I met in 1979. We're sitting here right now in early 2018. We have been friends for 39 years. That is just truly amazing to be in. There are very few people in my life that I've been in touch with that I can go back that far, 39 years, and still get together with them today. So this has been an honor, and appreciate you working with me on producing this product on how to interact with blind people. Thank you so much.
It has certainly been my pleasure and honor that you asked me to do this, and I feel that the more people get this and can look at it, the easier life will be for everybody.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you.